Hello, welcome to Reiki Women Podcasts. It's Bronwyn Logan here from Reiki with Bronwyn, and I've got my two lovely colleagues here with me, Carrie Varela from the Reiki Healing Society. Welcome, Carrie. And Michaela Daystar from Heartscapes. Welcome, Michaela. All right, so today we were chatting about enlightenment. I'll just say it straight out, right? So I'm not sure what it means to people. I think it means a lot of different things to different people. I remember seeing when I first started practicing the system of Reiki and seeing advertisements for things like, you know, become enlightened now. And I thought, wow, what does that mean? You know, and I thought it might have been a bit of a con, so I'm not sure. And maybe it was. So I'm sure there are a lot of different ideas about this and different ways of people approaching this and for different reasons. So let's have a look at some of them and how they relate to the system of Reiki. So Carrie, what are your thoughts about enlightenment?
All right. Well, so I've been interested in this question for a few weeks and thought of it as an interesting question for this podcast because, you know, enlightenment, like you mentioned, Bronwyn, it can be one of those things can be aversive to people, but people might have a sense of skepticism around it. And I'm curious about where that comes from, but obviously we're all very unique and different individuals, so we can't really postulate where that comes from. But then there's also people who might be really drawn to this whole idea of enlightenment. And I think I fall in that latter category, drawn towards this idea of enlightenment and have in my life's path. And so as I've been researching this topic, I do what I do, which is like research it on Google, find some more information, and creating a little bit of a container for me to explore it for myself. And then also piecing back my own personal experiences and journeys within Reiki that might fit the cast of enlightenment. And although I'll say that with a whole lot of humility, I don't consider myself an enlightened being by any means, better than, and I think we'll probably turn to this topic eventually, is that there might be some duality that's really present for us when we're really exploring this whole topic of enlightenment. And many of the people who have pondered about it through the ages, especially from the Japanese traditions that have informed Reiki, they also speak to this non-dual or non-dualistic connection to enlightenment as well. So when I was doing some research on this, it was when I searched just what is enlightenment, and I typed that in my Google, the first thing that came up was this topic of the age of enlightenment. And so from a more Western perspective, and the theoretics at that time considered enlightenment as an emerging form or an emergence from one's self-imposed immaturity, and that prior to enlightenment, one's thinking, beliefs, and decisions are easily controlled by others or by an external authority. That age of enlightenment, this period of time in politics and philosophy in the West, was really about coming away from being controlled by your external authorities, controlled by the government, but rather giving people the opportunity to find their own path of freedom and happiness, control over one's choices in life, which I think we can all probably agree on that that's a good thing, right? But I think as we turn, if I turn more towards this Eastern way of thinking about things, I think it's really important, or it really helps us illuminate some of the aspects of Reiki as well. So there's this whole notion of Kensho, which is seeing one's true nature or Buddha nature. And so Kensho is like this initial insight or this initial awakening, this spark that maybe draws us into the whole experience of enlightenment. And then from that comes Satori, which is this initial insight or is a deeper experience of Kensho, right? So that over time, these Kenshos or these initial experiences of enlightenment draws deeper and deeper into a true deep experiencing of awakening. It's an experience that we can't express in words. It's something that we just know. And seeing your self nature once, which is kind of the equivalent of Kensho, so seeing your self nature, seeing your true self, just seeing it once is never going to be enough. You need to deepen your experiences further and bring that experience of connecting to one's true self into maturation. And I think that's really a lot of the topics we talk about within this context of Reiki, traditional forms of Reiki, is about bringing an awareness of our true self, the light of who we are, having those initial experiences of it, but ultimately bringing that into our daily life. And how do we do that? There's no right or wrong answer. And certainly Reiki within the context of the Reiki precepts gives us a little structure with which to understand that. I was also thinking back on my own journey. So again, I don't consider myself enlightened by any means, but I can pinpoint some milestones on my journey that really created transformational and profound shifts in my own inner world, in my own inner awareness. And that was really began for me in 2011. I quit my corporate job. I knew I wanted to follow this path of Reiki. Probably had some of those little Kenshos, those little experiences of my true self, my path in life, and committed myself to following that insight. Took me to India. And while I was in India, I was traveling all around by myself. It was a really intense experience, a transformative experience in and of itself. And the last few weeks of the trip, I spent my time in an ashram in New Delhi. And the ashram was dedicated to this man named Sri Aurobindo. And he, and along with his counterpart, which is called the Mother, they are two huge leaders within India, formed a huge part of the philosophy for the independence of India, and have written some pretty astounding works, books about enlightenment, about yoga. So I was in the ashram and I was like in their energy field, and reading all of these works, and really felt a huge opening through my third eye, had visions of both of them coming through my dreams, and different experiences. But ultimately, there was a meditation in the evening after dinner, and I was going to it every evening. I didn't have anything else to do. I was just staying in this ashram. So it was kind of a typical night. I've been doing this for a few weeks, and went down to do the meditation, and as soon as it began, I don't even remember the context of the meditation, but I was kind of overcome by this feeling of an immense energy moving through me, and my whole body tightened and I froze, and I can't really describe it except that there was like these ants that were like crawling on my skin. And as I felt that, I like was inside the ant, and I was like this molecule inside them. I was also like as big as the universe. And again, you can't really put words on that, but I felt this intense spiritual awakening happening within myself. And I can say from that day on, my inner world changed and shifted. And I felt differently about life. I saw life differently. I could see life from a more expansive perspective. And so I think it was some combination of Kensho Satori that was with me in that experience. And it was like having that higher consciousness, like a connection to a higher consciousness, was the thing that brought me out of an ordinary consciousness just based on, what am I going to eat today? I had a bigger vision of life and my future and my experience and my place in the universe. And all of that wisdom really imparted me a better clarity on how to follow the path that I was following, path of enlightenment, a path of spiritual seeking in order to find what And I don't know what I found, but I think some of it does actually circle back to these more Western notions of enlightenment as well, as like finding more happiness, more self-autonomy, more freedom in my life to live my life by my own terms, not being constrained by external authorities, but really living from my heart, from my truth. So, anywho, I'd love to hear your guys' thoughts about what is enlightenment and maybe your own experiences of it as well.
Wow. As I thought about, this topic, this conversation, I kind of remembered back to like my first encounter with the concept of enlightenment, which would have been back in like fifth grade and reading the book Siddhartha for school, which told the life of the historic person who we know as the Buddha, and his journey to his own enlightenment and, therefore the founding of the spiritual practice, religion, philosophy that we know as Buddhism now. And reading that, the only like context that I had for this concept of enlightenment was the Judeo-Christian concept of heaven. I was raised by atheists and therefore, given no spiritual container or structure or guidance or invitation, but just kind of, hey kid, follow what you're interested in. And but growing up in the United States, of course, just steeped in the Judeo-Christian framework. And so the concept of heaven being a perfect place of joy and happiness and perfection that you go to after you die. Was the model that I had when reading about this person who spent his life seeking the good thing, right? Whatever the good thing is, right? Which in the book it was called enlightenment. And in the moment when it describes, Siddhartha kind of coming to the end of his journey and kind of sitting underneath the tree and like, having his final moment of enlightenment. Again, the only context I had is, well, he must have died and gone to heaven. Like he must have sat under that tree until he died, and then he was such a good person in this seeking that he went to heaven. And so for the longest time, like in my mind, enlightenment was dying and going to heaven, right? Like that's what it meant. Like you weren't a living person walking around on the earth, going to work and paying your bills and eating breakfast. And you're enlightened, right? Like you have become some kind of celestial being. And, certainly, the Buddha and the deities that are associated with the Buddhist tradition are, spoken of and understood in supernatural terms. But what was completely lost on me at the time is that this was actually describing a way of being, a way of thinking, of feeling, of being. That happens in your life on earth, right? That isn't something that happens after you die or you die and then it happens. So that I was, when like when I that finally registered for me, in adulthood, I had to kind of chuckle at this perspective that I had for the longest time that really caused me to completely miss the point of the invitation. And so at this point in my life, right, I've circled back around to having a relationship with what that point is. And that relationship is one that is rooted in my identity as a Westerner. Like I did not grow up in a culture, in a tradition that had Buddhism at the forefront, right? So I can't claim to have a deep understanding or connection with a relationship with the concept of enlightenment as it exists in its founding culture. So my relationship with it is a Western relationship and one that, has this kind of funny background of totally conflating it with a completely different tradition. So the relationship that I have with it now really does come through Reiki, and it comes through the idea that the precepts in the system of Reiki were, in a certain sense, a simplified, secularized version of the invitation of the Eightfold Path, which leads us into enlightenment. And so, from that perspective, going all the way full circle from like enlightenment is dying and going to heaven, this completely complex and like unattainable thing that doesn't even feel real, right? Because that was the other thing of like conflating it with the idea of dying and going to heaven, is that I didn't have a relationship with that concept either. So for me, both of them went into this category of like make-believe, unattainable, not real things, right? So now, circling to it from the perspective of Reiki, it's the complete opposite. This very, very simple, very, very simple invitation that living as an enlightened person is about having particular mindsets and relationships to our thoughts, to our feelings, to our body, and to the world. And through the lens of Reiki, that's described as it's described through the precepts. Right? How do you feel? How do you live your life when you're enlightened? Well, you live your life unattached to anger and fear. You live your life rooted in gratitude and in the present moment of what is present here and grateful for it. You live your life true to your way and your being diligently, and you live your life compassionate for yourself and all other beings at all times, which is simple, but as we've talked about before, not easy, right? To actually live our life day to day from that perspective. We can also, look to concepts like sanmitsu, right? An enlightened life will be one where our body, our mind, our voice, our breath, our energy are all integrated perfectly in alignment with each other. We feel grounded, we feel spacious, we feel connected to all of life. And, really forefront of all of that is meeting life from a perspective of compassion and unattachment to fear and anger. And from that perspective, this is potentially an achievable way of being, right? It's not a, make-believe fantasy. It's not a absolutely unattainable ideal. It's a very simple and beautiful way of living life that is not easy because it requires us to shed so many layers of protection that we've been carrying, and so many mindsets and viewpoints and beliefs and hurts and wants and desires and all of the things. But it is something that could be achievable. Now, I suspect that what enlightenment really means in its cultural correct origins is possibly somewhere in between, or something maybe even different than these two kind of sides of my own life that I've described, that that there are layers to it that I don't yet understand and that I haven't yet touched. But what's meaningful for me now is that I have an accessible pathway to understand and to build a relationship with that concept that I did not have before I was practicing Reiki from its Japanese origins. And that pathway allows me to see that there are moments in my life, right? Perhaps, like you described, Carrie, this moment in your life where you had this really intense experience. I haven't had an experience like that. When I was kind of inside of Judeo-Christian spaces, I would often say, I have not had an experience that where I feel like I've connected with God or with Jesus or with angels or with Mother Mary. Like, I haven't had a like, whoa, I am interacting with something supernatural right now kind of experience. I just haven't. Part of me is a little jealous of people who have. I kind of wish I had, although sometimes they seem a little scary and intense. But what I have had is many, many moments in my life where I was working through an experience that previously would have been, terrifying or evoke really powerful anger, or that I would feel incredibly sorry for myself, or I would not be able to make a good decision, or I would be acting out of selfishness, and was able to walk through that moment from the perspective of the precepts. And then the impact on how I feel, right, in my just daily life is profound. Right? The feeling of being stable and grounded and safe, the feeling of having an open perspective of possibility and spaciousness, the feeling of deep connection becomes present in those moments. And it's not an everyday, all the time thing, right? It's something that happens in moments. It's happened sometimes over long moments, days, weeks. But more often it's these moments, it's these flashes where it's like, oh, I've just shifted into a way of being that I had to work for, right? That wasn't natural to me through most of my life, maybe when I was a tiny child. But isn't that what Reiki does? It has us remember who we really are, which we were closer to when we were tiny children. So, yeah, so that's kind of how I've approached this question, right? What has been my evolution of my understanding of the concept of enlightenment? Where am I now? Definitely still feels like a concept that I don't, you know, is not my own, but one that I have much, much more connection with and much more lived experience to help me understand it than I did before. And that's because of the system of Reiki, which I'm, you know, is one of the many things that I'm very grateful to this practice for. What comes up for you, Bronwyn?
Yeah, oh, a lot. going in all different directions, my brain just now. But I just the last thing you said, you know, because I just remember when I was living in Darjeeling, and there was this Tibetan teacher there, and Ken Rinpoche, and his explanation of what enlightenment was that if he came up behind you and hit you over the head with a piece of wood, how would you react? And that sounds really weird, but you know, it's that thing of you know, would you go absolutely nuts and crazy, which is sort of what you were talking about just then, I think, Michaela, that you know, we learn as we grow and transform in this life, we learn how to be here in this world. And in a way that is, I don't know, you know, we where we start to understand better how things work and how we fit into that. And you know, I always thought that was a really funny thing anyway that he said. Actually, I think I'm really bad at telling jokes. I think actually part of that was that if you were sitting in meditation and he came up and hit you on the head. But at any rate, you know, you get the idea. So, my feelings about enlightenment, I have never had a lot of feelings about enlightenment. I don't know. I sort of, it's funny that you were saying about like as a kid, it sounded like something that you died for, because I think I may have thought the same thing. And we're probably not alone. I don't know about Carrie, but you know, I think that might have been it is because I was brought up as a Christian and I was brought up as a Catholic. And you know, heaven was definitely a thing. So, you know, that you would evolve into that as a that being the transformation being death. Yeah. And so I think I probably did think that too. And then and getting older and understanding that, you know, that it's actually an Eastern philosophy and understanding of the world, I don't feel particularly connected to the word. And I think that for me, I don't know, there's something about it. You know, Carrie, we were talking at the beginning and you said about this adverse thing that you know, some people are adverse to it. I think I saw a lot of marketing for enlightenment, as I was saying, and that definitely put me on a path of like, yeah, right, you know, just leave me out of that. And if I look at what the Dalai Lama, for example, would think about it, you know, his thoughts are very much it's about a personal, our personal journey. You know, so it's not really about someone making you something, or you know, so I couldn't go to one of these courses where they make you enlightened or whatever, because I just my heart wouldn't be in it, and I don't really believe it, you know. I do believe that, you know, individually that we, you know, are working towards that we're working on ourselves. And for me, I really do love the Shinto ideas. And actually, I can't remember who it was, but a teacher of Aikido, maybe it was the founder of Aikido, I can't remember, said that they believed that Shintoism was the original religion, if you like, yeah, using the word religion very loosely here, or spiritual practice for the whole world, right? And I loved that. I know it is Japanese, but it's the values of it for me really connect with me. And that idea that if I understand what's happening around me in the natural flow of the world, the more that I understand that, if I feel that connection, that experience of knowing what's right and how to move and what to do and to read the world, then I am living in this totally interconnected space, which to me would be probably what you might call enlightenment. And I, you know, it's like, you know, the kami, the Shinto deities, yeah, they're not all good. You know, some of them are, they all have like personalities. And it's like a tree, the kami of a tree has its own personality. And see, these are the things that we just don't connect with, and we don't think about, and we don't feel. And if we sit in that space with that tree or with whatever environment we're in, and really allow ourselves to sit in it and feel it and be it, you know, that to me would be enlightenment. But the word itself doesn't draw me in, and it doesn't make me want to think about it. But I do get the idea of initial experiences adding up, you know, that you've both spoken about. And I think that that truly is our paths that we Reiju is the perfect example of that, you know, initiation, initial experience. And when we have Reiju, that we have this feeling, we sit into this feeling of something that is a reminder of who we are and at our very deepest core. And look, it doesn't happen with every Reiju, and but there is that potential for that, and that is what it is there for, to give us that potential of that. And the more that we can work on ourselves, then the easier it becomes to slip into that potential and be in that space. So I see the system of Reiki definitely supporting us in moving, you know, transforming ourselves individually to into a space that could that is more in tune with the world, and that probably is, I'm assuming, enlightenment. But I am no, I'm I couldn't say. That's my experience. Any other thoughts there?
Well, I think it's interesting that we haven't brought up two other ideas within Reiki, which I think really bend towards this idea of enlightenment. And the first one is the fourth Reiki symbol, and translated as the great bright light, right? And so it's this idea, this notion that as we shed these layers of trauma, self-limiting beliefs, aspects of ourselves that really aren't ourselves, that we get more in touch with the light inside of us, right? And then it's a light that's inside of us, but it's also inside of the universe. So it's this great bright light, right? That's in each of us, but also we can be in our own light, but we can also be nourished by light external from us, right? That universal light. And like Hiroshi Doi said, you know, Reiki is the combination of light and ki, the energy and life force, right? So, you know, I think of just, you know, having insight and wisdom in our life really comes from this place of enlightenment, maybe is one way of saying it, but just that, or maybe we another way of saying it is our wise self. Maybe it's another way of saying it is understanding our true nature, as the definition of Kensho suggests. So, you know, I think that that's interesting to think about and throw in the mix here. But then also this idea of Ansan Ditsume, And this level of peacefulness that the founder of Reiki achieved. And I think in Nicholas Pearson's book, he talks a little bit and elaborates about how, it might be just a story within Reiki. There's this kind of notion within it, or this dialogue within the history of Reiki about how Yasui was seeking Ansan Dzogchen, and was doing it under the guise of some Zazen meditations. And he spent many years exploring these Zazen meditations and didn't get to that place where he was enlightened or achieved this state of inner peace that he was seeking. And so he went to his teacher, his Zazen teacher, and Zazen teacher says, well, you have to be prepared to die in order to achieve it, which is kind of interesting based on what you guys were both saying about, enlightening something that we ha happens to us after death, or that we have to die to or in order to achieve. But that, Yasui, he had this transformative experience on Mount Karama, and that was this the ultimate giving or receiving of Ansan Dzogchen. And then in Nicholas Pearson's book, I've never heard this before, so I don't know exactly the source of this, but apparently after he had this experience, he went down from the mountain and went to that teacher, and they confirmed, somehow, I don't know, they had some ritual or experience that they can confirm that somebody has achieved this state of inner peace. But I love that Bronwyn's laughing right now because, again, if he was meditating and someone hit him on his head, maybe that would be the ultimate proof of whether or not he had attained enlightenment or not. And
You tell me, you so much better than I did, right? Well done.
And truthfully, some of this, we have to look at it. Where is ego in all of this, right? And is it, what happens when we're enlightened? What does it do? Or do we achieve an enlightenment from our ego? Because I think for me, enlightenment is being in touch a little bit with my ego, to be able to see my ego, and even like striving for enlightenment, while it might come from a good heart, and a positive intention, it might also come from this place of ego, competition, wanting to be better, wanting to be bigger, wanting to be better than who you are. And so I think there's definitely some dialogue around non-duality there. But, I think ego is a big part of it. We have to really look at that and unpack it. Where, I think of being enlightened is being willing to see the ego, to recognize it, maybe to soften around it, to try to let it go, try to make your ego a little bit smaller. And in that way, you're not becoming better, bigger, brighter. You're becoming more soft, more human, more compassionate, more drawn towards equality rather than hierarchy. So, anyways, Bronwyn, I'm sure you have something to say
I
there.
was
It looks
just
like
thinking, you know, what you were just saying about the ego. I think a way to see that is possibly with that idea of the little I and the big I, you know, so like that big self and we have that little self. And so what you were just saying really fits with that, because if we were to be in that space, we would be able to see the little I think, right? The little I is there. That's the small little mean self, right? But the but you know the bigger gracious self is aware of that, I think. And I think they can both live there together, I think, some in our human self. Yeah. Anyway, I'm no expert on that, but there was something that you were just saying about duality. Oh, well, I guess, you know, in Buddhism they say that it is compassion and wisdom that are the things that we're working towards. And you know, I just have this thing about religions though, that, you know, why do we have religion? Okay, we can say that it makes us a better person, but they also keep us in line and keep us, you know, doing what they want us to do. Yeah. And so, you know, I don't know. I'm always a little suspicious of religion in that sense. And I like the idea of it just being that, you know, what we're living is an experience, a path that we are trying to transform ourselves. And you could say to be a good person, but that's because religion tells us to be a good person, isn't it?
Well, I mean, I think that aspect of religion plays on the duality of our human nature. You know, we have an altruistic impulse and we have a self-serving impulse, and they are in relationship to each other in terms of our survival. And which one takes the foreground in any individual person's behavior depends so much on our life and our perspective. And so religion gives us a container that says, hey, foreground the altruism, like push that forward. But then, you know, there's human frailty. And so within religious systems, you know, there's often been the duplication of structures that cause us to go back to that self-serving impulse. And so, you know, what's been so interesting for me about working with the system of Reiki is that, you know, it's undoubtedly rooted within the religious, spiritual, philosophical perspectives of Buddhism. And a lot of that, like, explicit structure has been taken away. And so it brings it down to these simple direct experiences with ourselves without a lot of the, like, philosophy and structure, and, like, here's why, and, you know, maybe some of the things that you're speaking to, Bronwyn. And, you know, there's been again, this conversation really has had me reflecting on, like, my personal history with these broad categories of religion. Because, you know, again, I was raised by atheists. Both of my parents were atheists. My grandparents were atheists. Like we're a strong atheist family. But that doesn't mean that we don't have spiritual perspectives. Some of us don't. But you know, there's been this interesting kind of mix of spiritual perspectives. And on the one hand, you know, through my mother's line, there's been this strong perspective that we shouldn't need religion to tell us to be good people, right? We should choose to be good people because that's the right thing to do. And because part of our human impulse is to be kind, you know, to be good, to be generous, to be, you know, to do the right thing, to be honest, to have integrity. And that we should be able to override the, you know, the other side of that without a religious structure telling us that we have to, or we won't get the big reward if we don't, or, you know, we won't be in favor if we don't, or, well, you know, whatever the messaging is. So, you know, and I think that's really powerful to be able to find inside of ourselves the motivation for goodness and kindness outside of that. And the world puts a lot of pressure on us to not be kind. There is plenty of opportunity for us to not be kind, to not be in integrity, to not be honest, to not be good, to not be generous. And there are a lot of reasons why, like, it can make a lot of sense for people to, you know, us in our own lives, people in general, to behave in those ways as well. And so, what is the structure that helps us to make the choice between these two sides, or among the many, many, many shades of gray that are inside of that? And that's a answer. That's a question that we all get to ask and apply to our life. And I would say that practicing the system of Reiki, while not a religious experience for me, has absolutely given me structure around compassion, goodness, generosity, reciprocity, integrity. That has helped be a guiding light in moments where that choice is murky. Right, where it could make a lot of sense for me to make a choice that is more self-serving or more, you know, this other realm than strictly from a place of compassion. And I'm really grateful for that, because for a lot of my life, I didn't have that. Right. And I was told we should just be able to choose goodness because that's the right thing to do. We shouldn't need a structure to help us to do that. And I think we do need a structure to help us to do that, because there's a lot of good reasons to choose self-serving directions. So that's one piece that comes forward. And then on the more lighthearted side of things, I had to chuckle when you were talking about the programs that promise enlightenment, and then ego. Like, what kind of ego do we have to be leading with if we're like, I can give you enlightenment for 1995, whatever the case is. And I was just one of my cohorts of my year program just ended this past Sunday, and so we were planning our graduation ceremony. I was like, yes, and you'll receive your certificate that says you are now enlightened, because you have completed this 1 year program. And we had a good laugh about it, because we all knew that that is 100% not what I am promising in this program. But that what we receive is a structure for making choices in our daily life and feeling resourced and resilient and capable of making those choices consistently, such that we might live a life that feels like it has something to do with enlightenment. That's all I can promise.
I think I saw this meme floating around once. I was trying to find it, but I can't find it. But it said something about this, like, I got this. And it was somebody like holding the sun. And it was like, I just took a weekend course. I get it, I got it. So, which is kind of ironic because, weekend courses are enlightening. And I mean, if you just think about it, just being receiving light, receiving wisdom, feeling that inner compass guiding us in the confusion and darkness in our life, just guiding our path through the wilderness of our life, right? But we can lose sight of that, and you can't just, that's why I don't think of enlightenment as a state you can reach. It's something that is inside of us and that we can tap into it, and we also have to seek it out, right? We can seek it out by being in community with each other, that we share and we pass that spark of light between us. That like the pursuit of just knowledge in and of itself can be really enlightening. In the Upanishads, there's a verse that says something like, the false self is grasping in the dark, and our true self is bathed in light. And so, how do we can put different words, different journeys on it, different ways of looking at it, but how do we go inside of ourselves and mine for that light, that wisdom that is a reflection of our consciousness? And we're all awake, we're conscious beings. And so all of us, I think, have this capacity to understand ourself and our true nature, but it seems to me that it does need to be awakened, because I think of the people who probably have done the worst things in their life, or worst things that I can imagine doing to somebody, like harming somebody intentionally or even unintentionally, really comes from ignorance. Like you like that they're so stuck in that small self that they've never even really experienced a larger sense of self, a connection to all beings, so that they don't realize by harming somebody else, they're harming themselves as well. Or they can't see how their own inner world is so oriented towards themselves and like a narcissistic point of view that they really can't see how their actions are harming somebody else, right? And I feel like there's been times where I didn't realize I was harming somebody, or that I was choosing something that was just self-serving. This is something that, like in my marriage, I'm constantly working on, because we just, my husband and I, were always like kind of stepping on each other's toes about what's good for him, what's good for me, and what's not good for him, what's not good for me. And so, some of that is like stepping back, letting other people have their day, having their moment, and having their, to recognize that what I want might not be of service to them. So, that seems like it's part of it too, is, getting out of our own way.
Well, I don't know. The Dalai Lama also said that we, excuse me, that we don't have to be Buddhists to have a spiritual life. Yeah. And that says to me that we don't have to have enlightenment, you know, because it's in the Eastern term, if we're not, you know, if we're not Eastern practitioners as such, right? You know, if I was still, I'm not a practicing Catholic, but if I was still a practicing Catholic, you know, it wouldn't be to leave that, to become a Buddhist, to achieve enlightenment. And just because I was a Catholic who didn't actually have enlightenment in my path, if you like, because it's not the path that I would be taking, doesn't mean that I can't live a spiritual life and achieve what, or transform, be, transcend, you know, the small I, if you like. Yeah. So I don't think it's necessary for any of us, especially Reiki practitioners, to be Buddhists or to need to be enlightened as such. What I think is we need to, I think, you know, everyone's spoken about that today, but we need to be aware and to grow and to find what it is in us that we can shift and move into this person that's there. And you know, Shintoism believes that at the base of us all, we are good. And I also believe that. And I think that's what your mum was saying, Michaela. And I think that's a really beautiful place to come from. You know, to find that back inside of ourselves. But even though we don't have to be Buddhist, as I was saying, it's very interesting to find complementary things for us in different practices and to support our growth. So yes, enlightenment for all. I think it sounds great.
Not just a cheesy marketing tagline now.
Reiki women,
No, it
enlightenment for all. There we go. Yeah.
is. So you, dear listener, just by listening, have now become enlightened. Congratulations. Please like and
We've
subscribe and
promised
share
that for everyone.
this. Well, thank you everyone for being here today. And that was a really fun conversation. Enlightening, to say the least. And I look forward to our next conversation. And I look forward to hearing from you guys who are listening as well. What are your thoughts about enlightenment? Have you been enlightened? Are you about to be enlightened? Will you be enlightened? Do you care? I'm not sure. Let's see. So please leave some lovely comments for us to read, and we can have a chat about it on our Facebook group, which is Embodying Reiki. Yeah, Reiki Women Podcast, Embodying Reiki, and or on YouTube. We look forward to seeing you there, and make sure you like this and also share it with someone, because I think it's valuable that we get conversations going, and that's really what we're trying to do in conversation with each other here and in conversation with you. So thank you very much, and see you next time. Lots of love.